Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
Later on the show, we'll be talking to author and podcast host Joe Piazza. But like we do now every week, first we're going to do a check-in. Hi, Kim. How are you doing today?
Jen, I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm okay. You know, I got the shot. I got my vaccination on Saturday. And did you know that some women, perimenopausal or menopausal women, are having like a menstrual reaction to the shot?
Really?
Like it's making women who haven't gotten their period in years get their period. I mean, this is anecdotal. This is not science, anybody, but this is anecdotal. Making period people who haven't gotten their period in years get their period. And for me, I had just an unbelievable crimson wave.
Did you really?
Woo! Yes, it was insane. I think I'm just over it. And I had a sort of hot flash anxiety attack combo yesterday. Like my hormones from the vaccination were just very like out of whack for several days afterwards. And yesterday I took my kid to the store. And on the way back, I was like panting like a demon. And I had to like lay down and like fan myself. And my daughter was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Look, I think this is a hot flash." And she was like, "Is that like puberty?" And
I was like, sort of,
you're kind of right. But yeah, it was a whole thing. I obviously made it through it, but nobody's really talking about that. The vaccination can affect your hormones. Is my understanding. So I seem to be recovered today, but
I'm very happy to hear you're recovered. I had my first hot flash in a Madewell store. And I told myself, I was like, okay, if you're having hot flashes, you are too fucking old to shop at Madewell, first of all.
I mean, at least you aren't in Forever 21.
Oh my God, the indignity of that. No, that's crazy, though, about women getting their periods. I hadn't heard that at all. When are you getting your second shot?
In 2 weeks, I'm getting my second shot.
But you feel really relieved, right?
Oh, I can't even tell you. It was like a veil, like a cloak came off my body getting that shot. It just felt like the release of the last year of anxiety. I mean, you know, I felt incredible when my parents got their vaccinations. Like that was the first thing I was like, oh, yes, thank God, because they both have some comorbidities and I was really worried about it. And they were also those kinds of people who were like, I can travel, I can take off my mask. And I was like, ugh, the whole time. But it did feel for me, I was just like, it just very much like felt like, oh, we're closer to the end than the beginning, finally.
Yes.
I pictured like I was like, I got the shot and I was driving through LA and I was seeing people like eating outside. And I was like, oh, soon I will eat outside in a restaurant. Soon I may be served a cocktail in a bar. Like I had this like amazing just feeling of freedom. And then I went to the 99 cent store. Like I don't even know what I was doing, but like I took my freedom right to the 99 cent store.
I dined in a restaurant last week. Indoors.
Inside? Oh, right, because you're fully vaxxed.
I'm fully vaxxed. I went for my nephew's birthday. My mom and my brother and I went out with his kids. My mom's vaccinated. My brother's vaccinated. The kids are kids. So, you know, they were sort of on their own. But it was really kind of strange and wonderful.
Did you have like, I mean, awesome, but did you have like, like I've had so many anxiety dreams of being in a restaurant or being at a party and being like, why am I here? Why is my mask not on? Did it feel like a waking nightmare or did it?
No, it was, we were the only people in the restaurant except for one other table. So, and it was this very like overdone restaurant, like very Upper East Side, like fancy Italian where like, you know, the salad fork has a salad fork.
Right. The salad is a salad fork. Right.
Or no, but like I was trying to make a joke. It didn't work.
Oh, I didn't get it. I got it. No, I'm sorry. I didn't sleep last night. I'm so slow on the uptake. I get the joke. Sorry.
It was a medium joke. It wasn't such a good joke, but it was, there were lots of forks is my message. So in that way, it did feel sort of like a dream. But not right. A waking nightmare. It was actually, it was really nice. And it did feel like, I remember this time last year thinking, I am really aware that we are just at the beginning of this. And I agree with you. I feel like now I can see the other side.
What did you wear to go out to a restaurant?
I wore some Nili Lotan trousers, black, and a silk shirt and some clogs.
Okay. All right. I was just wondering, this is a whole process for me. I was thinking about the audacity of a blouse today. I was like, particularly like all these people with these like puffed sleeve blouses, it's just like, and they look so done on Zoom. All you really need is a puff sleeve. Like everybody else, like, oh, I'm my slouchy t-shirt or whatever. It's like the audacity of a puff sleeve. It's like, here I am. I've got it together. Even though there's a pandemic, you know?
Yeah. Like who the fuck is she?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, my mother and I do this thing when we're FaceTiming where if we repeat a story to each other, which we do all the time, we tap our heads twice, which is code for you've already told me this story. My mother, based on listening to our podcast, has now decided that I say fuck too much because she said fuck too much. Oh. And so now I am to tap my head twice every time she says fuck. And I'm also supposed to stop saying fuck.
It's such a good word. I mean, it's a little lazy. It is a little lazy. I can do better than fuck. I say fuck all the time. I can do better than it. I could do better. You know, I have an imagination and a decent vocabulary, not excellent, but you know, better than from whence I came. And I definitely don't say fuck, but sometimes it's just like, oh fuck. Sometimes it's just, it's the best way to describe a feeling.
It expresses so much. And then there's also the times when it's like, oh fuck.
Like, yes.
It just works.
Well, there's also that Wire episode from The Wire where the two detectives, the whole episode is just fuck. And it's just the two of them going, fuck, 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 oh, fuck. And it's a whole, it's brilliant. It's like, it's amazing. But I do want to, before we get into this guest today, which I'm super excited about, Jo Piazza is our guest today. And her podcast is really interesting about something that, to be honest with you, I fucking usually hate all mom culture things. I was never like a mommy lady. I was never like groups with other moms. It always made me feel uncomfortable. That probably was me. I probably missed out on all kinds of community, but whatever. I have some weird aversion to mommy things. But this podcast about mom influencers gets into like so much more than that, which is like the changing of the way we're experiencing media and like how influencers are basically the new women's magazines and the racial disparities in influencing and, you know, whatever. It's really good. So I'm very excited to talk to her. But before we get into that, I do want you to talk about the change of heart you may have had, the sartorial change of heart.
Interesting. I'm trying to remember.
Well, we just talked about it. It involves something you previously hated and you may be turning around on.
Yes, of course. Overalls.
Yes.
I hate all articles that purport to tell women over 40 what they can no longer wear. I think they're all bullshit. However, I have always felt like overalls is a place I cannot go. But lately, I'm kind of liking overalls. And lately, there's a brand called Denimist that I really like. And they had this cute pair of white overalls. And I gotta say, I am coming around.
I'm bringing you over to the dark side.
To the dark side. Soon I'll be wearing bud press pants.
That's big, big bud.
Big bud press. Anyway, we have a good show. We have a good show. I'm excited about this show.
Me too. Let's get into it.
All right.
Our guest today is Joe Piazza. Joe is a journalist, podcast host, and the best-selling author of 9, yes, 9 books that have been translated into more than 10 languages. She's currently the host of the acclaimed podcast Under the Influence about mom influencer culture, which just wrapped its first season. Joe's next novel, We Are Not Like Them, is out in October. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. I'm super psyched to talk to you about this freaky world of mom influencers.
Oh my God, it's so freaky. We have so much to talk. I could talk about it all day long. I have been talking about it all day long for a year now. So I've got a lot to say.
So tell us about Under the Influence, and why did you want to do a podcast about mom influencer culture? Or what you call the mom influencer industrial complex.
The industrial complex. Okay. First off, I never thought that I would be doing a podcast about mom influencers. Let me just say that right up front. But then I had my second baby, B, who just, I mean, the kid didn't sleep. She would only sleep if she was attached to my body. So there's nothing you can do except scroll your phone on Instagram. There's no way to be productive. Like, I couldn't even watch the first season of West Wing, which is what I did with my first baby while I was breastfeeding him, which was such great comfort food. Just all these liberals with great hair, you know, being nice to each other. But all I could do was scroll Instagram, and I was being served all of these picture perfect images of motherhood. And I very quickly realized they were strangers. They were clearly not my friends, because my friends don't look like that. And they were all trying to sell me something. So I went a little deeper and did some reporting and realized that these mom influencers were making serious goddamn money. That this was an entire industry that had arisen as all of the jobs that I used to do in media were dying. That this was what was replacing all of the magazines that I used to work at that no longer exist anymore.
Can I ask a question about how much money women make? Like, if a woman has, say, 100,000 followers on Instagram, how much money is she going to make off of her Instagram account?
If you hustle that 100,000 and you are very good at what you do and you have high engagement, you can definitely easily pull in 6 figures on that. So we're talking 100,000 to, I interviewed one woman, she has 56,000 followers, but her engagement is very high. She's very, very good at what she does. And she pulled in $300,000 last year.
Wow.
I mean, that's good. That's good money. And but what I realized reporting it is that it is a ton of work. Nothing is what it seems in the mom influencing world. They're hiring professional photographers. They're essentially creating mini magazines, which makes you feel a lot better when you look at it, because you're like, oh, my shit, like they probably have a shitty life too. They just hired someone to clean their house and take pictures of the nice parts of their house. So now I feel a lot better about the whole thing.
That brings me to a question I had, which Jennifer and I were talking yesterday about the fact that it seems like influences are being blamed for damaging women the same way people used to talk about fashion magazines being so damaging to women. Do you think that's true even for women in their 40s?
Yes. Yes, I do. I mean, I'm in my 40s. My friends are in their 40s. And I think that's such a good point that the influencers are now being blamed for damaging women, which is amazing because it's just we're always blaming women for damaging other women. We're not thinking about the men who created these platforms or made these platforms so addicting or created the algorithms that only serve us beautiful pictures, essentially. We blame the women who are making the content, who in a lot of contexts are probably women that are very similar to who we are. I mean, yes, they probably have cleaner houses than I have, but, and their kids wear matching outfits, which my kids wear nothing except hand-me-downs and maybe something I bought like once a month at Target. But I just think we always blame the women, and that sucks. It completely sucks. And also, one of the things I started thinking about as I was reporting this podcast is, we have agency. If you don't like following someone, just unfollow them. We don't have to hate follow them. You know what? For years and years, I didn't read Vogue because, God bless it, I couldn't afford anything in Vogue. It wasn't my jam. It did make me feel vaguely bad about myself, so I didn't pick it up. So don't follow these women. There is an Instagram influencer and a fucking TikTok influencer for every type of woman out there. And you can pick, and the beauty is you can pick and choose who you follow.
Right. I mean, the thing is, when we're talking about women and we're talking about women blaming other women, there's also the thing, there was a recent episode of the podcast, which I thought was a brilliant episode. It was called Burning Cats. It was all about what a terrible place the internet is or can be for women and how much white women in particular turn on each other. And honestly, everyone else online. And I don't know, do you want to just talk about that episode a little bit?
Oh my gosh, yeah. That episode, first off, reporting that episode just scared the shit out of me. And the response to that episode was insane. Just, you know, hundreds of DMs in my inbox. We got the name of the episode, Burning Cats, from an article by another journalist, Katie Kelleher. She wrote an article about how she was addicted to reading nasty gossip about other women online, other women influencers, women writers, and she couldn't stop. So she started researching it and compares it to what people in 18th century France did for entertainment. They burned cats in the public square. They're like, we're bored. Let's just burn some live cats. And it's very similar to what we do on the internet by leaving nasty comments, by perpetuating all of these hate boards about women influencers, women celebrities. We're just bored and lonely and trying to entertain ourselves. So instead of burning cats, we're burning other women. And it is. It's mostly white women. It's mostly women that are the same age as the women that they're tearing down. And we have a great academic researcher on the show, and the research into it is that a lot of it just comes from a place of loneliness and vulnerability in a world where for so long, women have been pitted against each other as if we have to see every other woman in the world as competition for finite resources. And that's been set up mostly by all of the men since the beginning of time. And by recognizing it, I think it's just interesting for us to take it to heart and be like, can we stop doing this? Can we stop burning each other like cats? Because we all came on the internet to try to find community because we're lonely and isolated and we want someone to show us how to be a woman in a world that hates women.
You know, online abuse, it's something I absolutely just have I can't tolerate it. I like physically can't tolerate it. And being a person who now we call ourselves content creators.
Oh, I hate that.
That's when it all went to shit, when they started calling writing content. Oh, like then anybody can do it and it's a commodity. But I think it keeps women from putting themselves out there online, and because it's just not worth it. And I wonder two things. I mean, first off, let me ask you, like, how do you deal with, I'm sure just even making this and getting in the world of influencers, like you probably got some harassment and criticism.
Oh, yeah.
How did you deal with that?
So much hate. Now I ignore it because I think that my skin has gotten so thick over the years after getting so much hate thrown at me after writing a lot of content over the past 20 years of my life. And ever since social media came around, it has just been, I can't write anything that makes everyone happy. Like, someone is always pissed off. Someone always thinks I'm the devil. Someone always thinks that I should burn in hell. But the hate from this podcast was really interesting because it was directed at my family sometimes.
Wow.
Because I was talking about moms and mom influencers. And part of the podcast is that I try to be a mom influencer because I thought that felt like the right thing to do. I was very clear that I did not want to shit on this world. I feel like a lot of articles about the mom influencing world just snark the hell out of it. They don't treat it like a business. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of nastiness, even in the mainstream press, honestly. And I think it's because a lot of people look down on what these women do. And that's not fair either. But a lot of the hate that I got from this was, oh, you'll never be a mom influencer. You're not good looking enough, or you're clearly a terrible mother that you're even trying this, or look at the way you're holding your daughter in that picture, like you're going to break her neck. And when they started attacking my mothering and my kids, that got to be too much for me. And that was really the moment that I was like, I don't want to have anything to do with my family on the internet.
Yeah. Did you learn any strategies for how these women who are super successful at being, you know, very online, any strategies for how they deal with it?
Yeah, they turn it off. They have to, if they can continue going, if they are successful, they don't read it. They just don't read it. They have to shut it down. But so many women that it got to them that they legitimately had actual nervous breakdowns.
That was what was so remarkable. Sorry to interrupt about your episode. Listening to these women sort of circle the drain as the result of all of this.
Yeah, they had to shut down not just their social media, but then shut down their businesses because they're like, the hate got to me. The hate seeped into my skin and my brain and made me suicidal and depressed. And I interviewed one of the women who created one of the sites that it's a place where women can comment on other women called Get Off My Internets. And her response, I was like, you created this place where women read things about themselves that make them want to kill themselves. And she just said, then they shouldn't read it.
Wow.
Oh, you know, I mean, I do wonder, the part of the problem with all of this moving in this direction. And one of the things you say is that, you know, this is the future of content, right?
Yep.
Influencing is the future of content. And I think one of the problems, now that I'm really thinking about it, is that it is so individual and collaborative and you are alone, right? Mm-hmm. So where do you get feedback, right? You get feedbacks from the likes and the dings and the, you know, like, oh, I'm getting engagement. But how do you know if you're doing a good job? You're not working as part of a team, right? Doing something together. So it's almost, and this, I found this too, like being lonely, you're shooting a dart into the world by putting something online. And you wind up looking at the feedback in total, even though the feedback is not accurate because the place that the feedback's coming from is not professional in any way for the most part, right? And even the positive is like, the positive is really big and the negative is really big and it's all outsized. But it's also I imagine it also kind of perpetuates this like unhealthy sense of self, whether it's positive or negative, because it's such lonely individual work.
Yeah, I think that absolutely makes it so much worse. But the feedback isn't just like feedback either, right? Like in this industry, it translates into dollars. So you're getting the feedback and the likes and the dings. And of course, those feel good because you feel like you did something right. But you need those likes and those dings and those numbers for brands to keep paying you money. And right. I saw some crazy stuff. I mean, there's one mom influencer who was so disappointed that one of her kids was less liked by the internet, by Instagram, than her other kids. And so for his birthday, she asked the internet to like him more than they usually did.
No, that's awful.
It's awful. There's no other word for it than it's fucking awful. But it was true. And you know, I think that's part of what scrambled my brain thinking about this, that your kid, it's not just you. When I'm putting myself out there in a story out there, I'm like, fine, take it or leave it, like it or hate it. Like, I'll be fine. I'll do something else. But when your kid is the one that other people are liking and judging, and that just, that kid is, I'm like, well, he's going to turn into one of the Corys, either Haim or Feldman. Pick your poison.
Oof. Either's bad.
But that brings something up that we were talking about yesterday, which is this fact that there's a debate that mom influencers are using their kids as quote unquote workers by including them in content. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you think this exposure is affecting kids?
We don't know yet. It's the Wild West. It's an insane experiment because a lot of these kids, or the kids haven't grown up yet. The influencing industry, really, what we're seeing on social media is only about 5 years old. There's the kids of the early mommy bloggers, and some of them have come out and said, it has completely ruined my relationship with my parents. I feel exposed. I don't trust people. I mean, my self-image, my self-worth, and my identity were really hard for me to form because I was constantly being put online and the comments and the feedback were constantly coming back. But we have no idea what's going to happen to these kids of influencers who all of their images are constantly being put online. There's no regulation in this industry, and they are working. They are essentially workers in their parents' media company. And I think that mm-hmm. has to be acknowledged, especially now that SAG-AFTRA is allowing influencers into their union, which is so interesting. And we interviewed them in the last episode. But if influencers are allowed to unionize and pay into a health and a pension fund, then we need to think about laws protecting the influencers' children, who are the basis for so much of this content.
Yeah. I mean, look, this didn't go that well for celebrity kids.
No.
Like, no. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like making children famous doesn't ever seem to go well. There's very few examples of it being like, yep, that was a great experience for me.
Yep, I loved that. I mean, I'm like every single cast member of Different Strokes. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, so many. I mean, I'm thinking of Joan Crawford's kids. I'm not saying these influencers are mommy dearest, but who knows? I don't know to get the shot right. Who knows? But
it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to get that shot right. One of the things that I did trying to become an influencer is that I did what influencers do, which is they hire a photographer to take a whole week or a whole month of content in one day. So none of this is happening in real time. It's essentially, we all know what a magazine photo shoot looks like. That's what it is. And so I hired someone to come and take pictures of my family. And I was like, we're going to shoot 7 days of content. We got like one day of content because my kids hated it. They have to take thousands of pictures and they have to pose. And it did feel like work. And they're babies. They're 3.5 and 1.5. And they were just like, no more photos, no photos. And it was adorable and also so sad and just tragic at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. You know, it's really contrived and inorganic. And it kind of goes against my entire parenting philosophy, which is like, kids should just be able to kind of, you know, the child-led parenting philosophy of letting kids be and do what they need to do. And instead, you're sort of defining them from a very young age. I mean, you're defining them usually gender-wise, you're gendering them for sure, but you're also like in a number of different ways, you're defining their experience in this very contrived way that feels very inorganic to me. I mean, I didn't have a young baby when Instagram was, I had like a 1.5-year-old. I was not influenced, let's say that, mm-hmm. but.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the most damaging thing though is that they don't have privacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that just seems like the most vulgar thing to like take that away from a child.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's terrifying. It goes beyond influencers too, right? It's all of us that have small children in the age of social media and post pictures of our kids need to have some kind of reckoning about what we want to post, what we feel comfortable posting, whether or not all of our accounts should go private. Because even though we like to share these pictures of our kids, at the end of the day, the only people benefiting from it are the founders of Instagram and Facebook who need our content to sell ads. That's it. We're just spoon feeding them more and more money so they can serve an ad every 3 posts. Is that what we want to be doing with photos of our kids and the cost-benefit analysis of what we're getting back, is that enough? The sharing, the camaraderie, and should we just shut it all the fuck down?
remember it.
Right. And the data sharing, you know, I was thinking about like when I had my daughter and, you know, everybody's waiting for you to have the baby, you know, it's that last month of pregnancy and everyone's like, hey, did you have the baby yet? And you're like, you'll fucking know. Like, I'm not, you know, and she was a week late and whatever. So I was thinking, I posted like a birth announcement, basically. Mm-hmm. They gave like her time of birth, her weight, mm-hmm. like these very intimate details about her on Facebook.
Yes.
And who knows where that's been captured. You know, I was thinking about that just the other day. I was thinking that was a real invasion of my child's privacy within hours of her life.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's of course it's been captured somewhere. We talk about that with an expert on data security in one of the episodes. And with one of these Instagram birth announcements, we post their first, middle, and usually their last name, or their last name is very obvious because people know your last name. We post, yeah, like you said, their like weight, height, all of that, which kind of tells whether or not you're like a healthy baby. It is a marker of something. And your address is so fucking easy to find. So people have all of this information to make it very easy to steal your newborn baby's identity.
Right.
Right. Right. And for what? So that, I mean, I guess it's nice, you know, everybody gets to see pictures of your baby, but also newborn, nobody needs to see a picture of a newborn baby. They all look the same.
They all look exactly the same. I could post a picture of any newborn baby right now and be like, look, I just had a baby. And people would be like, of course you did. And I could be like, no, that is actually, you know, another Kardashian baby. That's not my baby.
Right. But I mean, any white newborn baby.
Any white-ish newborn baby. Like, right. I got all like olive colored skin, the scrunched up face. They all look exactly the same.
And now a word from our sponsors.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And we're back. Speaking of white people, there are some things that I find very unsettling about influencer culture. But one of the things I find so unsettling is how much it rewards lily white heteronormative women and really leaves behind influencers of color who seem to have fewer opportunities and get paid less for the ones that they do get. Mm-hmm. So what did your research find about that?
There's a huge pay gap between what white influencers make and what influencers of color make. They definitely get sought out for way fewer opportunities. It's a problem. It's a problem that people are starting to recognize. And by people, I mean influencers of color. There are Instagram accounts, one called Influencer Pay Gap, where people can anonymously write in and say exactly what they were paid for a campaign, exactly what they had to do, and their race. It's fascinating to read through. And we read through some of them on the episode, but it has created a sense of transparency. Now, very, very interesting, after the reckoning of last year, after George Floyd, all of a sudden, we all know this, like speaking, I actually think there should be a podcast called Speaking of White People. So speaking of white people, all of these brands start scrambling, right? They're like, oh my gosh, we have to at least act like we care. And I'm so cynical about that, but a lot of them did. And so they start reaching out to Black female influencers en masse. And all of these women were like, screw you. Where were you a year ago, 2 years ago? Like, you didn't answer my emails. But yeah, I talked to a lot of them. They're like, but, you know, we'll figure this out. Like, yes, I want to be part of their campaign. Yes, I want to get more exposure. And I want to put my content in their brand so that people can see more women like me. So it's just a nasty, terrible, vicious circle that is hopefully getting better. But brands have forever undervalued women of color. The one influencer that I told you about who made $300,000 last year, and I wrote a profile about her for CNBC. She's a Black mom influencer, and she's so candid on the podcast and awesome. She's like, look, I am in a lot of these meetings, corporate meetings, with all white men who have no idea how to talk to Black women. And you know what I know how to do? Talk to Black women. And so I tell them, you should pay me a premium. Her confidence is incredible, and that's why she's been so successful over the past year. But she's like, no one in your company knows how to do what I do, and you are going to pay for it. And I think that is starting to happen, but it's only very recent.
Right. Are you optimistic?
I'm not optimistic about anything anymore.
You know, one thing, so before you did this and before you wrote a million books, you were a gossip columnist for a long time. In a recent episode of Under the Influence, you sort of reckon with those years, which was in the early aughts, I think, right? And that was a time specifically when we were really hunting celebrities, particularly female celebrities.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about that work now? Like, how do you feel with everything you've learned from this podcast, but everything just being older?
Just being an old person in the world.
Just being a post-40.
Post-40-year-old in the world. Yeah. Oh, I feel so gross. I have a lot of mixed emotions. First of all, I will say, being a gossip and celebrity reporter in New York City right before the internet ruined the world was fantastic. It was the best job I could have ever had in my 20s. And it also made me a goddamn great reporter because I was running around, and it wasn't just celebrities. You know, I was working for Rush and Malloy. We're covering powerful people. We cover business people. We cover politicians. I've covered every presidential race since 2002. But I had to work harder because none of the people we report on ever want to talk to us. Never.
Right.
And so you learn how to dig deep and be a good reporter. And thankfully, I did report for George Rush and Joanna Malloy, who took this so seriously and taught me so, like, everything about ethics and journalistic morals and how to be good at your job that I know today. And we had a very, very strict general counsel. So I feel like we did what we did the right way. That said, in the early aughts, women bashing was what got attention. And we're talking about Britney Spears melting down, Lindsay Lohan melting down, all of these young women who, like, child stars. Of course they were having breakdowns, but the world just loved the schadenfreude of watching them destroyed. And as a gossip columnist and as part of the media, I contributed to that. And I feel like shit about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what stories haunt you the most when you think back?
Well, Brittany haunts me now, especially after watching the documentary, and she's always haunted me. I was the reporter that they flew out to LA when she shaved her head, when she was having her breakdown. And of course, I was a kid, right? I was probably 26, 27. What the hell we were the same age, but what the hell did I know about being a mother? And I'm covering this woman who's clearly in the throes of postpartum and anxious and depressed. And I had no perspective. And no one did. No one was covering her the way that we should have been covering her. And even I worked at some of the celebrity magazines as well. And, you know, what sold was schadenfreude. There's a reason that Jennifer Aniston was on every cover of every magazine for so long, because it sold well. The numbers were great. The money was there. Because everyone wanted to see America's sweetheart torn down. And that goes back to what we were talking about with burning cats, women wanting to tear down other women. And I mean, it's stuff like, I can't feel terrible all the time, because, you know, then I'll just, like, go out and walk in front of a bus. But they are lessons that they're lessons that I want to think about as I raise a daughter in the world. And as I raise a boy, as a feminist young right now male presenting human in the world. I want to think about how to raise kids that don't want to burn cats.
Yeah, you know, it's like trying to get at what that gut feeling is that makes people want to burn cats. Like, I always think women are especially unkind to women, and especially famous women, who they believe to have an eating disorder.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And it's like, I always want to say, like, and do say, like, if this is true, then does this woman not deserve our empathy? Mm-hmm.
And bad plastic surgery, let's be honest. Yes. Like, we can't stop. We can't stop looking for it. They can't stop trying to hide it. It is such a sick cycle. We can't stop because we don't want them to get older looking, because if they look like an old bag, we're going to say some shit about them. I mean, not me. One will say some shit about them looking old. And then if they get work done, we're going to say something about them getting work done. Paulina Poroskova, the supermodel, has been doing a lot of work. She's doing a lot of work. She's been influencing me on Instagram about sort of all this, like, the impossible double standard around aging for women, which I think is so interesting. And, like, you know, Kim and I were obsessing over somebody's work yesterday. Sometimes you just can't, you're like, wait, what is it?
We were.
I was like, is it that weird under the skin facelift?
But what I'm wondering about is that charge, you know, the charge that we get when we talk that kind of way about people, the charge that women, I'm not being very articulate, but there's something that we find valuable in some, like, really cheap, quick way.
Totally.
I know, but totally. Equally, when somebody turns around and says, I mean, I have comments about me that are so small, that are nothing even like this, that haunt me, that stay with me, that are like personal attacks online, and they stay with me. So the fact that we even participate, I mean, granted, I'm not leaving comments on any of these women's Instagram saying, I know you got a facelift, but, like, you know, it's like the fact that we participate it when we know when it's done to us, it's so painful.
It's so painful.
Yeah.
But also I think Kim's totally right. There is this weird charge, this weird adrenaline rush, but then there's also the sense of camaraderie. It's like, oh, we're bonding over something. Like, that we're, mm-hmm. It's like, it's community building. We're sharing that charge in a way. And I think it's because we are also hungry for camaraderie and community. And that is what has been served up to us as something that is okay for us to commiserate over, to talk about someone else's plastic surgery and work, even though all of the nasty shit, I talk about this in the show, that people said about me stuck with me so hard. Because I used to, for my stories I did for the New York Daily News, it was run by all men, so they made me do a lot of first person stories, most of which involved me, like, trying out to be a cheerleader, or I'm wearing a bikini in a boxing ring. Like, it was so fucking disgusting. But I did it. So my face was in the newspaper, and I remember people used to make comments about my nose all the time, and I got so self-conscious. Guys, I got a nose job. Like, that made me get a nose job. And I do love my new nose. Like, I think it looks wonderful from all the angles. And I'm like, if you want a nose job, you do you. But yes, those comments made me do this. So of course, if you're a celebrity getting, like, people talking about you and your body all the time, you are going to fix that shit.
I know. And even, like, even just the way that it's just, like, all this, like, hate and how it, like, bursts joy, I imagine. Like, I think about do's and don'ts, like, fashion do's and don'ts. And I think about somebody showing up for the red carpet in, like, a look that they think is great, that they're having some fun with, and then finding themselves in Us Weekly, like, no, it's a don't. And also the people, particularly in Us Weekly, who did that, like, fashion roundtable, were always, like, the dumbest, meanest, like, worst jokes in the world.
They're so mean,
but not even funny or clever. Just garbage, you know?
Mean. But the don'ts were even, like, the nice part of it. What about the pictures that circled people's cellulite on the beach?
Oh, yes. The National Enquirer, like. Mm-hmm. And it would all, it would just be like the whole cover would just be like Donatella Versace's butt. And I know I can conjure an image of Donatella Versace's butt. And I don't know
right now, like, as if it were my baby's face, I can conjure an image of Donatella Versace's butt.
Totally. And I don't know if I could name our Secretary of State.
Nope, Tony. It's Tony something. Tony something. Thank but it is not as clear in my mind as Donatella Versace's butt.
That's hilarious.
No, me neither. Me neither. All right. Well, now, switching gears. Go, Kim.
Well, you know, I did. No. I wanted to go back because I'm not going to. I was just.
No, go back.
I was interested in hearing about the QAmoms.
So I had no idea we were going to go to QAmom by the end of this series, but it's a thing. QAnon and conspiracy theories the people behind them have figured out that mom influencers are very influential. And of course, part of their conspiracy cabal has to do with pedophilia and eating babies and child trafficking, all of which is very on brand for mom influencers to dislike. I mean, it's a hard thing not to dislike. Like, if someone came up to me and they're like, "Do you condone eating babies?" I'd be like, "No, I don't think it's great." And so a lot of mom influencers have been influenced and have started packaging QAnon conspiracy theories within their beautiful content, just like slipping it in, like, here's a smoothie recipe or the perfect white paint for your house. Oh, also, you should email your senator about ending this pedophile ring led by Hillary Clinton, who is clearly the devil. And the content is so beautifully packaged that if you don't know what's happening, you're like, so they just exposed this big secret, this big lie, especially when all of us are getting our information and our news from, not us, but a lot of people, from their Instagram feeds instead of reading actual news. It's very, very dangerous. And it's gotten more dangerous now that QAnon has been injecting, pun intended, anti-vax news into a lot of these mom influencing accounts.
Yeah, that's scary. I mean, I did see that there has been some crackdown on the Instagram accounts. Like, it looks like they're kind of shutting them down, and then the influencers are coming back and they're like, no, now it's just dresses again. I did see that. But no, it's all terrifying. I mean, and you think about it, like, we all will be high and mighty about how bad Facebook is, but Instagram's owned by Facebook.
They're all the same thing. Yes, exactly.
Okay, thank you for satisfying my curiosity about QAmom.
Oh, QAmom. I mean, I loved it so much. I was on the phone with so many reporters that have been investigating it, and I just kept saying, I'm like, I want your beat. All I want to do, even though I still don't fully, I can't fully grasp what QAnon even is. Like, it's one of those things that just constantly confounds me, but I'll read anything about it.
We've talked a little bit about how industrious you are, Joe. All the books you've written, you've hosted 3 podcasts, you were a travel editor, you were a gossip columnist. That you're over 40, and this is a time in life when women's ambition tends to wane. Do you have any advice or hacks for being industrious post 40?
No, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing. I genuinely don't. And I'm exhausted. I have to say, I wanted to be a newspaper reporter, right? Like, I wanted to be a newspaper reporter for my entire life. I wanted to move up the newspaper ladder and become an editor, maybe work at magazines, maybe become an editor at large. And then, like I said, the internet blew everything up, and I am exhausted by having to reinvent myself every year or every 2 years and become a new thing. And it's like, I love podcasts. That is not to say I don't love them. I do love them. But the transition to do that, and I'm like, oh, well, maybe I should be writing for TV. Maybe I should do this. I'm terrified of the lack of job security in the world of the two words I hate, content creation. And I'm a post 40 woman with 2 very small children and just beginning to have to hurl money at their lives. So I think that so much of, and I want to be very honest about this, because I haven't been honest about this in the past when people have said, oh, you do so many things. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I just like have so many ideas. Like, a lot of this hustle comes from the fact that I feel like I have to hustle or I become irrelevant. And I'm not even just irrelevant, I don't make money to support my family.
the opportunities are going to dry up. I mean, I totally feel that. And it does feel like the ground is sort of disappearing, like behind, like it feels like as we're walking, the sidewalk is disappearing behind us. At least it does me in this career as a media person. But how do you choose projects? Like, how do you decide, you know what, I think the next thing I'm going to do is fiction, or the next thing I'm going to do is a podcast?
This is the only hippy dippy thing about me. That, and that I like to burn sage in my house to clear out the evil spirits. So I guess there are a lot of hippy-dippy things about me. That, and I believe that Hillary Clinton is the devil who eats babies. But see, QAnon, it's got into everybody. No, I think a project kind of picks you. Like, I have 1,000 ideas a day, and I want to do 1,000 different ideas a day. But I actually make myself sit down and start writing them and thinking about them. And of course, I'm a very habitual person. I think that we've talked about this before. I make myself write 1,000 to 2,000 words of whatever project I'm working on every single day. And if I can't do that for about a week or 2 weeks, the project doesn't really want to happen. It was just clearly a whim. So I think that the projects that do, like, have legs, they kind of tell you that they have legs. But then there's also the terrible process of pitching projects to people. I've had projects I feel like more people are saying no than they say yes now. So I have projects that I think would have been a goddamn home run as a podcast or a TV show 2 to 3 years ago, and now people are like, nope. So I think I'm iterating more and more things than I ever have before in my life, and that can be exhausting. The good thing is that I genuinely think I'm a storyteller. I love telling stories. I love telling other people's stories, which is why I don't want to be an influencer, because I have no interest in being famous myself. I hate that concept. But I feel like more and more you have to make yourself somewhat famous to be a storyteller to actually reach other humans. That got dark. I got dark, guys.
No, you didn't. You didn't get dark. I was thinking about how courageous you are. Because actually, it takes quite a bit of courage to put yourself out there like that. And you could say you're motivated by the fear, but I feel that too. But it's also courageous because you're really starting new careers all the time. But I mean, it's the same like tools. I still use a keyboard, etc. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But do you think of yourself as courageous?
No. No, not until you just said that, but I loved it. I got a little charge, the same charge I would normally get from being like, what kind of Juvederm does she use? When you call, like, I like that, I do feel like I'm reinventing myself all the time. And I like that definition of courageous. That made me feel good. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
How sweet this is all around.
I know. It's coming to a really nice place. We went dark and then we came back to a place of community and camaraderie and courage. Also, I can't be the only one that pictures the cowardly lion when I say the word courageous. Like, it just, that's the only thing. It's the only thing I can see in my head. Of course, now I see Donatella Versace's butt too.
Well, I've ruined you because that's all we're going to look at. So wait, all right. I have one more question for you. What do you still want to do?
Oh, that's interesting. I really do want to try my hand at a very good comedic television series or a feature movie based off the world of mom influencers. I think the world is just so ripe for satire, but also realness and rawness and honesty about not just what it takes to be a mother in the world, but what it takes to be a woman in the world right now. And I'm working on that. And I've been wanting to write for TV or movies for a while now. It's not easy. You guys know that it's not easy. Hollywood is insanely, it's just like, I was talking to my friend Nora McInerney the other day, who also has a wonderful podcast. And she's like, I just think it's a scam. And I'm like, I think it's a scam too. Because, you know, projects get optioned and then everyone tells you they love you and they like want to marry you and then they disappear and no one ever talks to you ever again.
Oh, it's so gross. It's the gross. I have rarely in my professional life experienced something grosser than trying to push an idea through a Hollywood meeting. And like, look, let's be honest. We're talking about being over 40. Like, there's few harder places for a woman over 40 than a meeting with a bunch of male white TV execs.
No, I've never felt grosser. In my last novel, Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, got really far in the process. And then our A-list celebrity just bailed. And then it was dead. And every executive that had loved it and, you know, wanted to have sex with it, they were just like, oh, no, oh, that was a dumb idea. Julia Roberts is gone. No one gives a fuck anymore. So I do want to do that just because I think that would be fun to write. But I want to write it, and I don't want to deal with having to do anything with people in Hollywood to get it made. So it probably will never happen.
Thank you so much for coming on, Joe. This has been really great.
Thank you, guys. This has been awesome.
Before you go, just where can people find you? I just want to make sure they can find you and follow you and your adventures.
Yeah. So I mean, it's sadly, as much as I'm like, I want to quit Instagram, Instagram is the best place to find me. And it's the place where people can do it very easily. So it's my Instagram account is Joe Piazza Author. And I put all my stuff up there. I put all my podcasts, all of my books, and now much less, but there are still adorable pictures of my very cute children on there.
Thanks for listening to Everything is Fine. We're your hosts, Kim France
and Jen Romolini.
Our producer is Natalie Rivera. If you want to support the show, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/everythingisfine. And be sure to rate and review us on all the platforms, which really makes a difference. You can follow the show's Instagram at EIF Podcast, email us at everythingisfinethepodcast@gmail.com, and you can find me on my blog, girlsofacertainage.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.